Away from your radio? Listen to 1010XL on the 1010XL app, a free download for all smartphone users, or say, Alexa, open 1010XL.
Helmets and Heels, built by Dreamfinders Homes, is presented by Underwood Jewelers and American Window Products.
On 1010XL,
now your hosts,
Lauren Brooks,
Donna Murphy,
and Lauren Rue.
Happy Tuesday evening to all of those out in the 1010XL 92.5 listening audience. We're happy to be back with you as we are every Tuesday evening here on Helmets and Heels, built by Dreamfinders Homes, 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. every Tuesday evening. Good to see you ladies again. Everybody well and off the sick bus?
Looking at you,
Donna Murphy.
I was looking at Lauren.
That's true. She's come down with the latest.
I'm perfectly fine, thank you. Okay. I had a sore throat for less than 24 hours. I've consider that a giant victory. Mm-hmm. So I'm good. I may be coughing a little bit. I may be blowing my nose a lot, but I feel 100%. I've worked out every day, so I'm good.
Well, good. Glad to hear that. The Virginia Cavaliers are feeling very good about themselves today. And what's being called the ultimate redemption story after being knocked out in the first round. You've all heard, of course, at this point that they were the first team to lose to a 16 seed, the University of Maryland. Baltimore County took it to the Cavaliers last year, and this year they found a way to make it all the way to the national title game. It took an overtime to get it done, but they beat the Texas Tech Red Raiders 85-77. I am already annoyed by this whole redemption story thing.
And what?
I know. And I think it's mostly because I'm bitter for my friend who's the play-by-play voice for the Texas Tech Red Raiders. I was really hoping that he, in turn, would get this win for his team. But this idea of it, I guess it is redemption because you got beat in the first round last year and then you went all the way this year. There were just too many things that happened in their favor. And I don't know, in terms of these games that they played close, there was controversial calls last night. They probably shouldn't have even won last night, really, in regulation. But I don't know. I'm just annoyed with this whole redemption. They got ridiculed last year for being the first 16 seed to win, the first one seed to get beat by a 16 seed. And now it's this, I mean, you're a one seed. You should make some kind of a run, shouldn't you?
I mean, essentially, yes. But does it ever happen?
But they were a one seed last year. I think that's the part that I love. It's the same coach in Tony Bennett. It's a squad that has a lot of talent, but everybody said their style of basketball is never going to win a national championship because it's too much of an emphasis on defense. Now, granted, DeAndre Hunter, who played so well last night, I want to say he ended up with like 27 points, but that graphic may have come up before overtime started. But he was so incredibly good. He covered the really talented player Jarrett Culver for Texas Tech that really had a quiet Final Four and a quiet national championship, mm-hmm. but throughout the season was spectacular. And he, like I said, scored a lot as well. So he didn't play in the game a year ago. So they were without one of their best players. And a lot of times in basketball, obviously one player can make a drastic difference in the game. I don't think, I watched that game without a bias whatsoever. Right. I did not care who won. I did not think the officials screwed up in favor of one team or the other. The one replay in overtime, the officials shouldn't have overturned that. I thought that was Texas Tech ball when it went off Moretti.
Mm-hmm.
Which, by the way, if you're a college-aged girl and here's an Italian, yes. Okay, literally
like,
from
what
Italy
are you waiting on?
Basketball.
That's who you need to absolutely like.
Yeah, if
get
he
him
can
in.
Cook, yeah, absolutely. But yeah,
I think we're making some assumptions here. But
well, I know later we'll talk about replay specifically. But overall, I thought it was a phenomenal
great
game.
No, it was,
and I thought it kept people on the edge of their seats in a game that people predicted going in was going to be just a defensive slugfest.
Well, the first handful of minutes, 6-7 minutes, were exactly that, and there were some pretty poor shots taken offensively. But the flip side of that was these are two defensive minded teams, and that's what we were going to see. And I thought Twitter was funny because it took this, went down this trail of like, well, if you took the over on this game, you might as well go ahead and turn your money over now. And then as the game went on, it could not have been any better. And overtime, anytime you get overtime in a championship game, I don't think you can be disappointed in that.
And I really like Tony Bennett, the head coach of the Virginia Cavaliers. I think he speaks really eloquently. I think that he is genuine and humble. And I think he led a team that went through a horrible time last year.
Right.
And he had to pick up the pieces of these guys that are young and were embarrassed. And now they were able to look up and they are the champions. And he calls it, in his words, it's called a painful gift. And, you know, much like labor and delivery, it's, I'm sure, I'm not speaking from experience.
With the right
here,
drugs, you're probably
but
just fine.
For the most part, it's this awful experience, at least awfully painful experience.
Right.
Certainly before the drugs kick in, if you get those. And then there is this amazing, beautiful blessing at the end. So it can kind of be like that, you know, for a lot of women, especially if they have any sort of complications, it really is this awful thing. And mm-hmm. then all of a sudden they've got this wonderful, hopefully healthy baby at the end. So that's one of the first things I thought of.
Well, they were ridiculed, right, when they were – you never want to be the first at something that's not something you want to brag
sure.
about, right? The first team to lose to a 16 seed. So I guess I did not – I guess I underestimated how much crap they took for being knocked out in that opening round and being the first.
I didn't realize.
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
So, again, congratulations to the Virginia Cavaliers. I do think, though, the officiating, there was, I believe, at one point where Kyle Guy tripped over his own guy.
He did.
Pun somewhat intended. And they called the foul on Texas Tech, right? And I thought that was kind of one of those moments where we want to have perfect or close to perfect officiating, right? We also, on the other side of things, talk about a game is really one of the best if you don't even recognize that the officials are even there, right? They don't become any part of the storyline. They don't become any part of the conversation. Well, the way sports are treated now, and with such a microscope and all the technology we have, we don't allow for that anymore because we want every call to be made exactly the way we think it should. And if it's not called right the first time, we want it reviewed. So it's kind of this double-edged sword, right? So with regard to Moretti and the ball going off his hand, which was one of those like zoomed in, zoomed way in, did it touch the fingertip or not, which ended up giving Virginia the possession back, was one of those moments that I found myself going, nope. I don't want this much. I don't want this much perfection. I want the human error to be part of the game to an extent. Am I alone in feeling that way?
Well, I mean, that's why I enjoy college. That's why I enjoy hockey playoffs so much, because those refs are nowhere near. They just let them play, let them go. There's not 10 timeouts in the last 2 minutes of a game. Stuff like that, I find little things very annoying to me to where I can't watch a game. But then you got to look at, obviously, the Saints game last year. And if you want them to play, you don't want the refs to be – well, then that one needs to be called. So you need the refs in that play. So it's hard. I see what you mean, but
mm-hmm.
not in all sports it doesn't happen. For me, hockey is the only one that I know just lets them play. Go.
For me, the replay bogs down the game at times, and I think there just needs to be a time limit. And some people would say, well, don't allow them to slow it down, you know, so much and have that millisecond by millisecond view of it. Just have them watch the replay in real time and then make their decision. And if they overturn it that way, that's fine. I think it's fine if they slow it down. But I think there needs to be a time limit. If you cannot decide in basketball, 30 seconds. If you can't decide what happens on a play within 30 seconds, then you're moving on. In football, a minute. That's all you get, referees. And if you can't see it in order to see enough evidence to overturn it, then you don't need to be reviewing it for that much longer because you're not going to change what you saw.
Yeah.
So, and I have really enjoyed Gene Steratore being there and kind of walking
sure.
us through the process. But I do wish they would speed it up because, right, you're already going to get all those timeouts and fouls in the last few minutes of basketball.
I think that, I think this idea of the referees or the umpires or whoever not being a part of the game anymore is archaic. I mean, they are so much a part of the game, even so much so that now they have analysts who sit on the broadcast with to explain things and walk viewers through it, that I think it's just more spotlights going to be on the officiating moving forward, and I don't like the idea of that. Again, I think there needs to be some room for human error, and if we look at every single bit the defensive no-call pass interference that the NFL's decided to adopt now, that someone up in a booth can make a call. To me, we talked about this a few weeks ago when they implemented this after the NFL meetings, that I think that's a terrible idea. I don't want that much of a microscope on the game. I need it to be free-flowing because you're humans and we screw up and that's what we do. And for years, teams have found ways to make that better. I don't want it to be a crutch for everybody moving forward with regard to why they didn't win.
And I don't think Texas Tech is sitting there today saying
no,
that.
I don't think
so. I certainly understand that Auburn was saying mm-hmm. that after yes. Saturday night. I do understand that because that is an iffy call on whether or not to call a guy who, you know, didn't really affect the shot per se at first glance, but he did possibly affect the body of the shooter. But either way, in the end, as long as they figure out a way to get it right
yes.
fairly quickly,
sure.
then I'm okay with it. Just don't take way too long.
Don't take forever.
But I do want them to get things right. And I think the most important part that came out of that Saints-Rams game is that even non-called pass
yes.
interference, so what we had in that game, the
sure.
missed PI, that can be called. That's important because otherwise there are going to be more situations like what we saw in that NFC title game, and that's not the way it's supposed to be.
Well, some would argue that voluntary OTAs are really not that important, but not Hayes Carline. He thinks that Leonard Fournette needs to be there Monday when things get going at the Jaguars facility. That's coming up next.
Helmets and Heels, built by Dream Finders Homes.
Presented by Underwood Jewelers and American Window Products.
On 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
We are just a couple of weeks away from the NFL draft. The Jaguars have to be feeling at least calm regarding their quarterback situation after the offseason acquisition of Nick Foles. But I think there are still some questions regarding Leonard Fournette and what kind of player he will be in his third season with the Jaguars. Hayes Carline, of course, of the Frank Frangie Show, also is a contributor on 1010XL.com. I suggest you go check out his most recent post regarding voluntary or non-voluntary OTAs that get going on Monday. First of all, this term voluntary in sports, you all played some level of sports, right? Whether it was
yes.
like junior high, high school, something where you were held accountable and expected to be at practice, right?
Mm-hmm.
I know, Andrew, you're probably
I consider
agree with
dance
this as well.
A sport.
Sure.
Sure.
Yes.
I don't think I ever missed any kind of voluntary practice, meaning the word voluntary when it came to practice was something that they had to legally say because maybe they weren't supposed to have practice because the school hours were, well, you know, you can show up if you want to. It's just voluntary. No, you were always expected to be at practice even if they gave the term voluntary.
Yeah, I feel like over Christmas break.
Right.
It had to be considered
voluntary.
Termed
but
voluntary.
Let's be honest, who actually considered like, oh yeah, I really don't have to go. It's like, no, you don't go. You don't play or participate
yeah.
usually most of the time. I really like what Hayes wrote about Leonard Fournette because this is, it's kind of last call, right, for Fournette in regard to what he is expected to do for this team and what everybody's been wanting him to do for the Jaguars. And this idea that there are guys like Jalen who, in my opinion, don't have to show up for voluntary OTAs because he takes care of his business and he plays in every single game, whether he's 100% healthy or not, and he doesn't cause problems on the field while he is playing and take himself out due to making dumb decisions like Leonard Fournette did up in Buffalo. So guys like Jalen, yeah, I'm okay. You don't show up Monday or next week for the voluntary OTAs. And you know what? As far as the defense goes, I'm willing to give them a little bit of wiggle room. There is absolutely no reason on this planet outside of maybe Fournette's children having an issue or something personal going on there that he has any excuse not to be there Monday.
I completely agree. I love this article Hayes wrote. And it's not, you have to take the fan aspect out of it, I understand, because him showing up to voluntary workouts, yes, would increase the fan base and make us more hopeful and be like, okay, well, maybe he's matured a little bit. Maybe he's taking it more seriously. Who cares? Who cares what we think, obviously. But, I mean, you look at Coach Coughlin. Yes, it's voluntary. We know it's voluntary, but heck no. You know, we all know it's not. And for him to prove to the coaching staff that he is serious about turning around and making sure that, you know, he's in on time and football is his life, yeah, he needs to show up.
When we talked about this on the Frangie Show, of course, discussing Hayes' article, and I remembered when we had Mark Long on New Year's Eve, when, a few hours before the Gator Bowl, Taxpayer Gator Bowl was going to kick off, and Mark said there were times last season that Blake Bortles would get to the huddle, call out the play, and Fournette had absolutely no idea, which is surprising because obviously he had a really good season in 2017. I mean, off the charts good season. Yeah, he didn't play in every game, but as far as expectations for a rookie running back, he was everything you would have wanted.
Right.
And then when it comes to last year, now all of a sudden he doesn't really know where he's going. So that shows a lack of commitment. And this is the time of year where, yes, it may not lend itself towards you scoring more touchdowns necessarily, but it's time to prove that you care.
I mean, I wonder how much of the locker room aspect of it,
right,
you know, contributed. If it was, it wasn't a cohesive unit last year, you know. So was he the main problem? No, but if he had true leadership sitting him down and showing him the proper way, that probably would have helped. And I don't think that was in the locker room, besides a few of the defensive players.
When you've got a new offensive coordinator, you've got a new quarterback.
That's exactly, that's reason enough. There's reason enough right there that you should spend every, this is your job. Your job is to carry the football and or catch the football or block or do whatever you're supposed to do for the Jacksonville Jaguars. And you're doing that under a new offensive coordinator, you're right, and a new quarterback. Now more than ever is the absolute time that any time there is an organized activity whatsoever, you need to be there. We can all appreciate to an extent going to Wyoming and working out with his former strength coach from LSU and, you know, taking himself out of distractions if that's what he did by going way up to Wyoming. And we've seen the Instagram videos and we've seen the tweets. And he wants us to know that he's portraying this guy who's working hard during the offseason. Great. That gets you only so far, especially with this fan base. And this fan base has every right to question his commitment to this team. Mm-hmm. So on Monday, there should be absolutely no reason, outside of some family issues, if there are any, that he doesn't show up. And if he doesn't, that's a huge red flag for me.
I mean, is it a team that wants to win five games again, or is it a team that wants to make it to the playoffs?
Well, and what is it? What does he want out of all of this?
You would assume that he's learned, I assume he's learned his lesson. I assume that when they came to him and they said, look, we are going to void the guaranteed money, which is a big hit to your wallet.
$7 million.
Mm-hmm. Yep. That at age 24, he looked up and realized that his behavior has been immature. And the only way to become the best possible player is to now listen to the advice that you're getting from your coaches and from the executives in the front office. And to me, if Calais Campbell's going to be there, now, what, 12-year veteran in the NFL or going into his 12th season, if he's going to be there, I don't care what your excuse is. I think you should be there. I even think Jalen Ramsey should be there from this perspective. You do now have, hopefully, very accurate quarterback, and you've got a new addition in the wide receiver room with Chris Conley. Well, the only way those guys are going to sharpen their skills, the absolute best way, is against one of the most elite cornerback tandems in all of the NFL with A.J. Boye and Jalen Ramsey. I personally would like him to be there specifically, Jalen. But I understand this is a business that they get to make those decisions.
Right.
It is under contractual obligation that they are there, so I get it. But certainly in Fournette's case, a lot is going to be asked of you from the organization's perspective, because you were a captain last year, you didn't live up to it.
No.
You may not probably be a captain this year, but you still have some wrongs to right, in my opinion.
No, I 100% agree. All right, Lauren Brooks, Donna Murphy, Lauren Rue here with you. Helmets and Heels, built by Dreamfinders Homes. I had a first happen to me. Well, it didn't actually happen to me because I'm here with you all, but I got a text message about 30 minutes before the show started. And I wondered if this was going to happen in my short time living in Florida. I've been here, 7 or 8 months now? And I get a picture.
Snake.
Alligator.
Alligator.
Oh.
On the neighbor's driveway.
We knew it'd be a reptile.
On the neighbor's driveway.
Yep.
Which is entirely too close for comfort.
How big of an alligator?
I don't really know.
I'm going to go with 3 to 4 feet.
That's what I'm thinking. Mm-hmm. I'm not very good at that stuff. It's like, can you guess how many marbles are in the jar? And it's like, I have no geometry.
This is different.
No, but I feel like that's a geometry thing, isn't it? Guess how, like, I couldn't tell you how long this table is.
True.
Eight feet, 6 feet.
Well,
I feel like if I lay down, I could maybe figure out.
It's gotta be bigger than 6 feet.
It's definitely 8 feet? Than 6 feet. Yeah, okay, see, that, to my point, long, yeah. I don't know, but I'm going to go with 3 to 4 feet. I mean, what the actual hell?
Yeah.
That is terrifying.
Mm-hmm. I knew you live in a swamp.
I know, but I didn't know they just like.
You live in a swamp.
They felt comfortable enough.
Your land of Nocatee was formed out of a swamp.
That is true. We do have a pond in the backyard.
Correct.
So, and I've seen him in there, but he just like is so comfortable with himself or herself. I can't. I don't know the difference.
So the pond is behind your house.
Yes.
Yeah.
And it moseyed its way up to the front.
Do you have a fence between the pond and the house?
No. Nope.
Oh, that's the first thing I
would
do.
Well, I can't put a fence up anyway that would block him because it's got to be one that you can see through.
Yeah, it doesn't matter.
That's fine. They have chain link fences.
No.
No, I don't think you can have chain link.
No, it has to be a certain fence. Mm-hmm. And this one, nope.
Iron? Can you do iron?
Yeah, but they could. Yeah, they can. I guess if they were really close together.
No, they can get through these.
Yeah. There's got to be some sort of solution.
I don't know, but it freaks me out.
Because if you had an animal, I mean, especially a cat or dog.
At what point can they eat you? Like, what size are they where you're... No, I'm serious.
We're not in serious trouble right now.
Okay, we're okay right now?
But if you had a little tiny dog, you should be worried.
Yes,
and that's what I'm saying. Okay. So if you had a dog or if you were considering getting an animal, you would have to be able to go to your HOA and say, I have to have a fence that's going to block out a deadly alligator.
This is Nocatee. No, they'll laugh at you.
Either way, it scared the crap out of me.
Be like,
I was like, you are kidding me. Then a neighbor, then I got stuck on this. This is the other part of this that drives me nuts. You know, put me on this text chain with some people in the neighborhood. And there's like 14, I don't know what. All of a sudden, I start getting all these text messages from numbers I don't recognize. And I'm like, what the? I'm like, oh, he added me. There's like 14 people on there. So they've now shared their alligator stories. And one sent a picture. Was like, this one was under my car 2 days ago. And I thought, I am not ready for that.
Well, be ready for the snake photos and for the wild boar stories. Now, have you had the wild boar stories?
I have seen two dead wild boars one time, which was really weird on the side of the highway. Yeah. I've also seen peacocks, which is also very strange.
Yep.
So basically, we don't have to go to the animal kingdom at Disney anymore because that's where I live, is the animal kingdom. Or did I ever tell you guys a story about Gatorland?
No. By the way, my boyfriend said he's seen tons of gators in Nocatee ponds.
Yeah. Right.
So.
Yes. Yeah. Well, I've seen them in the ponds. That's fine if they stay in the ponds.
Like,
I don't
you live.
I don't want you to get out
pond.
Of the pond. No, I know, but I just stay in the pond. I thought they were like scared of humans. No.
No. Right. Haven't you heard the stories?
Yes, where people are, I would assume, not being very smart and walking their small rat-sized dogs down to the
but
water.
Not just that. Right. I mean, what happened in Orlando at Disney? I mean, it's That awful story of the two-year-old.
Right, but wasn't that in a pond?
Yeah.
Or some open body
kind
of water?
Kind of more like a man-made lake-ish.
Yes, yeah. Also something I'm not getting into.
And
the ocean will be the only thing in the pool.
But you live very close to these things, and they don't just stay in the water.
But
well, they need to.
Don't forget the ocean has sharks. So
yes.
And jellyfish.
Yes, they do.
In the break, I'll give you
anything else
my
we want to scare
uncle's
you
phone
with.
Number. He
he'll
legally
come,
hunts
come,
gators.
Oh.
But I don't think he hunts the small ones.
Can he turn them into purses or belts?
No. But Gatorland, you're going to tell us the Gatorland
story. Yes, quick story. Have you ever been?
No.
Don't waste your time or your money or your sanity. When Jackson was little, who's 10 now, my son, I think we only had him. So he had to be like 3 or 4. We came down to Orlando to visit my aunt and uncle. And just for like a long weekend or whatever. And we're like, he is way too young to go to Disney. Like, we're not wasting money on, he must have been 2.5 because Lila was born by the time he was 3. So he was really little. So my aunt was like, have you ever heard of Gatorland? And we were like, and she's like, you can look that up. So we went. It was horrible.
Nope.
It was like 1,000 degrees, which is fine. It's Florida in the summer. But like all the alligators are just heaped up on top of each other. Then there's like people spraying you, like these kids sprayed my kid in the face in the water area, which I wanted to rage on in Mama Bear style. Then we got on this train that we're like, oh, okay, this train will go around this thing. Maybe get some airflow. No, it went like I could have walked faster than the train went. We were sweating profusely. We looked at each other and we were like, what are we doing? This is the worst decision we've made in quite some time. So
you should go to the alligator farm. That's way better.
Now, they have done
that. They serve beer.
The kids weren't really, with all due respect to the gator farm, weren't overly, maybe because they have gators in their backyard now and they think it's old hat at this
point.
Well,
they got the zip line. Did they do that?
No, but there's a zip line in Nocatee. They're just spoiled.
My
kids are spoiled.
I'm
raising spoiled children.
Yep.
It's a matter with me. No doubt about it. all right. The Jaguars preseason schedule, that's right, on April the 9th? we get to talk preseason schedule. It's out. And Nick Foles will face a familiar team. That's next. We are still a few months out from the preseason, but it will be here before you know it because the NFL game seems to be coming more and more year-round. Now, most of the time, preseason games are ones we kind of like look over and go, okay, let's check a box and nobody gets hurt and where are they playing and okay, a necessary evil, right, to get to the regular season. But with the Jaguars schedule being released today, there's a very interesting week two opponent, which happens to be the home opener in terms of the preseason schedule for the Jaguars, and that is the Philadelphia Eagles coming to TIAA Bank Field. So my first thought was less about Nick Foles facing his former team and things like that, and more about how much are we actually going to see Nick Foles in preseason? How much do we want to see Nick Foles, should see Nick Foles with this brand new offense, new offensive coordinator, questions about Leonard Fournette. We know the injury bug bit this team so badly last year that I'm sure there's going to be some anticipation regarding let's not break things that we just, these new toys we got, so let's hold back. There's also the talk about Doug Marrone running this extremely difficult, hard-hitting, literally, training camp leading up to the season. Brian Baldinger mentioned many times when he came on this program and then when he spoke about it on other NFL platforms that it was the toughest camp he'd seen in the NFL, which some now say maybe that came back to bite them because he pushed them too hard. So I went back to look and see how many games Blake played in and how many reps did he take. And for the most part, we saw 20 to 25 attempts from him over a couple of games. There was one game I don't believe he played in at all, which was the last game.
Yeah,
they usually don't.
Yeah. And so that, again, circles me back or leads me back to this question. Do you want to see Nick Foles in preseason? Do you want to see a lot of him?
Yes.
Yeah. I was going to say, I'll actually defer to the expert. How much on good quarterbacks leading your team? Donna, how much does Tom Brady play in the season?
In the preseason. Game two and game three is when you see him.
But how much in each? Does he play to the half?
See, last year was different because last year was the first year in the offseason that he did not attend voluntary workouts.
That's
and he's
right.
not doing it again this year. So we saw him a lot less. But generally, you don't really see him in game one. You do see him for about a quarter maybe in game two and then about a half. They pushed him in game four last year. I believe we saw him for a little bit, but that was it. I want to see Foles. I would like to see Foles for a whole half. That's what I would like to see.
I'm going to guess first game, a few snaps.
Right.
Second game, maybe a quarter. And then the third game,
that's when we'll
a half.
A lot
and
of
then
them.
The fourth game, none. That's yeah. my guess. Typically, quarterbacks are not going to get injured in the preseason. You know, I think the NFL referees probably are going to make sure that the quarterbacks don't get hurt.
Right. They've already tried to. The game is much more geared to keeping them safe. We realize
absolutely.
That.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
But, I mean, you look at Marquise Lee's injury last year. It was in the second preseason game against the Falcons and obviously gone for the entire season. So it's very important to make sure that your pieces are healthy. But as far as what I want to see, I would love to see Nick Foles play the first half of all four games just to see him with these guys. Well, maybe not the fourth because then he'd be playing with backups. But I would love to see him play the first half of the first three games and really get a feel for what this offense is trying to do. And hopefully by that point, TJ Hockenson will be a prominent role and play a prominent role on this team, be a prominent feature of the offense, the blocking and pass catching tight end that the Jaguars will have added with the 7th overall pick. That's the hope that we could.
You've
see
gone
him
from
as well.
Team Haskins to Team Hockenson.
Well, I can't have Haskins because they have Foles. Therefore, I am now on Team Hockenson.
So the other games, if you're interested in terms of the preseason schedule, they'll open on the road at the Ravens. Then they'll come back and have their home opener against the Eagles. Then they head to play Miami. In terms of television, that's the only one that's nationally televised on Fox, which is kind of like, ugh. I mean, I get it's the third preseason game, so we expect to see the most. But in terms of a little bit of preseason draw, kind of wish those were flip-flopped and they were playing the Eagles in that
right.
third on national television. I mean, I think mm-hmm. the list or the viewing audience would like that more. And
I
then
think
they'll
if
finish
it was
up against
in,
the Falcons.
If it was in Philly, then it might have they might have done that because then it's Foles returning to Philly. This is, you know, Eagles fans possibly right. coming here. So it really has, it's not that much. When he returns to Philly, that's more of a story.
But it's certainly a great storyline overall as far as broadcasters are concerned. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of angles to take. Foles' teammates love him
yeah.
and praised him. And, you know, we saw, I think it was Chris Long that had the locker that was, like, jokingly set up as a shrine to Nick mm-hmm. Foles. And, you know, all the fans do love him. And so if there are fans, Philadelphia fans, that either live here or travel here, what kind of reception does Nick Foles get? And DeFilippo knows that defense very well because he was the quarterback's coach against that defense when Nick Foles won the Super Bowl MVP. So I think there's a lot of different things that they can tie in mm-hmm. that's going to be fascinating. But in the end, reality-wise for Jaguars fans, they don't really even care what the Eagles look like
no.
whatsoever. It's just, how does this offense yeah. look? Do we have a proficient and accurate quarterback once and for all?
Yeah. At what point... this conversation will grow more legs or grow bigger legs or longer legs or whatever kind of legs you like closer we get to the season. But in terms of, and we know the schedule, at what point will Jaguar fans feel like they got that Nick Foles could do what, I mean, how many games in will he have to prove it?
I don't know that it's a number of games because remember Blake Bortles in his second year threw for 35 touchdowns and then had times where he couldn't, you know, be very successful
right.
and was inconsistent. And then all of a sudden 2017 happened and this team was a few minutes away from playing, you know, in the Super Bowl. So I don't know that.
Right. And it's also a team that started this season 3-1
right,
and everything fell
yeah,
off.
Yeah, beat the Patriots, right? So
yeah.
I don't know that it's going to be a number of games. I think it's going to be a how does it look? What does the eye test say? Yeah.
How are you winning these games?
Are you winning, obviously?
Yes.
But
important,
really overall,
yes,
how does the offense
there.
Look? Does it look like an NFL offense or is it still an offense that's stuck, you know, in the 70s style with run the football and play good defense is the overall mentality, but running the football on first and second down is not going to cut it. So I think it's not that that's what I think they're going to do, but I think it's way more of does it pass the eye test? And then, of course, do the Jaguars make the tournament?
Yeah. I think it's, by week 4.
The playoffs, you mean?
The tournament, yeah. The playoffs. Tournament. The tournament.
The big dance.
I say
by week 4. That's
by
it.
By week 4?
Mm-hmm. I think you expect, this is a Super Bowl winning
right.
MVP quarterback coming in. The expectations are very high because of especially mm-hmm. what has gone out the door.
Right.
So if you don't see somewhat of that caliber on the field, then the fan base, I feel, could quickly turn and be like,
yeah,
so
no,
we're paying you $88 million
to
look
that.
Like this?
No, I think there's something to that. You're right. The $88 million, the 50 guaranteed? 50?
Yeah.
50?
Yep.
Okay. For some reason, I thought it was 40, but you're right. It's closer to 50 guaranteed. The expectations are there is no waiting period. It's mm-mm. go in now. It's not Dwayne Haskins, who probably would get a lot more if he were even to start right away, would
right.
get some leeway and there'd be some learning curve time and let's be patient. But I think the patience is completely out the door under this scenario and the circumstances.
Yeah.
Well, if receivers are like last season, even at times not catching the football, right? If there's a bunch of drops, that's not on Nick Foles. That's on the receivers. So
as long as he's throwing a spiral,
which he will,
you know,
you don't have to worry about that.
Right.
But that's why I don't know that it's going to be necessarily him. And you do sometimes have to work out kinks with a brand new offensive system,
which is what the preseason is for. That's why I don't think this poor fan base has been patient enough and they finally got a quarterback that they can be proud of. So why can't they have the expectation and be like, okay, look, you have a time limit because we obviously know that we basically have you for 2 years until we draft our future quarterback. It's
sure.
kind of what.
But the Jaguars, in theory, I don't think the schedule is necessarily going to work out like this, but let's say the Jaguars started off with back-to-back games against the Saints and the Chiefs.
Right.
I'm not going to say that after those two games and then throw in two
mm-hmm.
other teams, after that first slate of games that I'm going to say, okay, he's definitely the guy or he's definitely not the guy based off the competition and based off of the teams that they're, you know, the teams that they're going up against as far as that high level of quarterbacks and, you know, in Drew
but the
Brees
problem
and Patrick
is,
Mahomes.
For me, the problem is you've seen him excel at that high level. He's beaten New England in the big game and been the MVP. So why can't he beat the Chiefs in a regular season meaningless game?
For me, that answer is because the weapons that the Eagles have are better than the weapons that the Jaguars have. And so I'm waiting to see, obviously, like I just mentioned, the draft. I'm waiting to see what the Jaguars add offense-wise. But if they still don't somehow come up with some weapons, then I'm not going to hold him accountable for that. I want to see what the entire offense looks like.
Well, it's football season year-round, especially on Tintin XL 92.5. But it's also golf season. We had the Players a few weeks ago. It is now Masters Week, and you'll be able to catch coverage play-by-play of the Masters beginning Thursday at 2 o'clock on the AM, also on Friday at the same time, and then Saturday and Sunday on both signals beginning at 2 o'clock. You will catch that on 92.5 FM and the 1010 signal. Speaking of golf, Donna Murphy, I don't know anybody outside of you and your husband who watched the Texas Valero Open. Did I say that correctly?
That is
Or the
correct.
Valero Texas Open?
We just call it the Valero Open.
Okay. And tell
In
us,
our household.
Tell us who won this tournament.
So Corey Connors won, who was very close to winning a few weeks back. But Cameron Champ, I believe that's his name. Right, Lauren? Cameron Champ? Does that sound right? Yeah. Thank you. Played unbelievably down the stretch and took the win away from Connors. Anyways, this guy that you really haven't heard of, he won the Valero Open, and he had a two-shot lead with like three holes remaining. And then all of a sudden, the camera kept showing his wife, who, first off, they kept telling them that they're newlyweds. Now, what is a newlywed to you?
Someone who's been married
less than a year.
Yeah.
That's a newlywed?
Yes.
Okay.
Okay.
Because I'm like, well, I wouldn't say I just had a baby. I had a baby 6 months ago.
Right.
I'm not saying, yes, I have a brand new baby.
So how long have they been married?
October.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
I was
like,
I
hear newlywed and I think like a month or two.
Oh.
If it was your first baby and the baby was only 6 months old, I think you could say you're a new mom.
Yes, I would agree.
A new mom, but you didn't just have a baby. Anyway. So they kept talking about, oh, the newlyweds and this is so exciting. So they kept showing her.
Right.
And then they kept showing her and showing her after every single shot he made. And so I turned to TJ and I'm like, why on earth do they keep showing her? Because now I'm uncomfortable. I'm uncomfortable for her because she clearly has no idea that she is constantly all over the TV unless she's getting like text messages nonstop like, hey,
we see
saw you,
you
again.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel bad because she was, you know, she's very animated. This is the first time her husband was winning and every time they showed her, though, she had a different drink in her hand. And
yes,
I'm like, hey.
And that was my favorite point. I didn't actually see the tournament. But,
different drink every time.
But the tweet or the link you sent to some of the tweets that had, you know, 20-second clips of her, she had a glass of wine in her face. I didn't watch the whole tournament,
right.
So I don't know if your opinion was it was overkill. From what I saw, I love that stuff. I like seeing, because I couldn't have told you who. Chris Conley, is that who you said? Or
Corey Connors.
Corey Connors.
Jaguars wide receiver.
Thank you. I do know who he is. Corey Conley. I couldn't pick him out of a lineup. The story is whatever. So,
right.
And it's the Valero Open, right?
Right.
Which is
and
like,
it would have been a sweet story, but
it was just weird.
It was overkill, and they comment. All they did was talk about her nonstop. Now, this has nothing to do with a jealousy of like, oh my gosh, it's a hot babe. Let's keep the picture on her. Like a Vern Lundquist.
She was wearing a hat.
Or Brett Musburger type of thing.
Yes, that was weird.
It wasn't that.
Catherine what's her last name, Lauren?
Not McPhee.
No.
That's American
Idol. I was like, where did I come up with that name?
But yeah.
AJ McCarron's wife. Just Catherine something or other. I feel Andrew would know this, but.
Catherine Webb.
God, what's the matter with us? Okay.
It was,
Creepy, by the way. If you haven't seen this, you must have been under a rock at some point. Just Google Brett Musburger and Catherine Webb, and a video will pop up where he is oogling?
Yeah.
Googly-eyed for her. The entire game, Alabama was playing somebody, and it was really uncomfortable.
And it wasn't like that. It wasn't like, oh, my gosh, look at her. It was a celebration. Oh, my gosh, look at her reaction for this shot. Oh, my gosh, look at her.
Because she looked flabbergasted that her husband was making the shots, and that's
right.
The part I found hilarious because, granted, he only qualified on Monday, so for him to be in that type of contention was awesome. But she didn't look like she ever expected her husband to do anything ever.
It was a complete natural reaction, and I appreciated it. But I would have liked it if I could see her maybe, I don't know, 3 times, not 25 times in the last 3 holes. I'm like, why do they keep showing her? This is so awkward.
I would be one of those wives because I'm somewhat psychotic at times when it turns. We've talked about competition and how we get really intense. And when Daniel pitched at Oklahoma State, I thank God, camera phones weren't, how old am I? I don't think they were a thing.
No.
I don't think anybody had a camera phone. Definitely didn't then. And that there were no TV broadcasts because I have overexpressive face syndrome in general. I also have potty mouth syndrome. And when those two are combined, when your husband is pitching and if he's not pitching very well, there were times where I was like losing my mind. And I think about living and dying with every golf swing or every putt or whatever and every pitch. That had a camera been on me, I would have made either a lot of people really entertained and laughed and think that was funny, or people had been like, who is this psycho? Somebody get her away from
See,
other
and
people in
public. I just felt bad. I felt uncomfortable for her because I know, I'm like, if I'm in that situation, you know, of all the photos we've ever taken when we're out on location, you know, I have owned it. I have that resting witch face that I don't know you're taking a photo of me and I look angry and I just do. I don't mean to because I think I'm a friendly person and I smile, but I just happen to have that face. And so I wouldn't look, you know, at all. I would have the same reaction like, oh my gosh, I can't believe it. But I don't know if it's because there was really no story. Look, the Masters, the Players was a few weeks ago. The Masters is next week. There's no story here. Let's just push all our chips in on this newlywed and just keep the camera on her. Because during XL primetime, I was talking to Joe C., who works for the PGA Tour Radio. And he said, he's like, what you don't see is behind the scenes. And he was working over the weekend and he saw just one camera the whole time on her. He's like, the whole time that camera, they were designated on her. I'm like, man, it's so awkward. Now she's like an overnight sensation. Now everybody's going to be looking at her for the Masters is what I feel like. Okay, let's go talk to Corey's wife.
No, there's a lot of golfers with hot wives, so there'll be plenty of, I think,
but that's
ones
the thing,
on
like
the
you've
camera.
Never see JT just recently got married. You don't see his wife. You don't see Spieth's wife, who just recently got married. You never see them.
But I knew Spieth got married. I didn't realize Justin Thomas did.
Pretty sure Fowler did, didn't he? Right?
Yes. Yeah, and he's engaged.
Or maybe
so
JT is
He's engaged. He's not married yet. Her name's Allison. She's a pole vaulter. And every time the camera finds her, it stays on her because she is drop-dead gorgeous. All right. None of those women will probably be wearing high heels out to golf tournaments. At least you hope not anyway. But we would like to give away a Peterbrook chocolate heel here on Helmets and Heels, as we do every Tuesday night. So Matt LaVey, who's now taking over for Andrew Gripson. Hello, Matt LaVey. How are you?
Pretty good. How about you?
Very good. Thank you. Let me see that shirt you're wearing. North Dakota Hockey.
Oh, yeah. I got a bunch of family up in the Grand Forks, North Dakota
area. Oh, it says Hawkeye?
Yeah, no, they're called the Hawks, but they're a big hockey school. So it's just to kind of play on words.
Okay, so I read it correctly the first time then.
You did.
All right. Very good. Matt LaVey, I always like to ask you what your favorite number of the day for Tuesday is. So please tell us what caller you'd like to take.
Let's go with number 4.
Caller number 4 to 641-1010 walks away with tonight's Peterbrook chocolate heel on Helmets and Heels, built by Dreamfinders Homes. The Cubs have been screwing things up not only on the field, but off the field as well. That's coming up next. The Chicago Cubs have not had a great start to the season, even though they're just 10 games in so far, 3-7. Now, it turns out John Lester's headed to the injured list because of hamstring issues. But the issues for the Cubs don't just stay on the baseball diamond. They also found their way into the press box. This was a story that I saw yesterday that caught my attention right away, and that's mostly because there was a picture that will catch your attention no matter if you can read the writing on it or not. It was a press pass that had a pink poodle on it. I'm not sure why there was a pink poodle on it. It was never really explained in this. But in their home opener, leading up to their home opener, the Cubs decided that they would do some renovations, decorations to the press box to bring back historic pieces of times in the Cubs organization. Fine. I totally get that. Now, when going through these items, you would think whoever's in charge would make sure that they weren't racially insensitive, because there was a time when, I mean, there was a color line, and there still kind of is some of that going on still. But you would think there would be somebody to check and say, okay, yeah, no, that's okay. This is not a historic, like, traveling exhibit of where baseball, how far baseball has come. There's a place for those things, and then there's a place to celebrate memorabilia from old from Wrigley Field and the Cubs organization. Well, a press pass, the one I'm referring to that has the poodle on the front, is from 1945. And from the time of this until 1977, women were not allowed in a press box. Now, how did you know that? Because on the press pass, it says, no women admitted. So the Cubs, in their tone deafness that seems to be increasing every, I don't know, time I turn around, this and then the Addison Russell suspension for the domestic violence. I mean, he suspended 40 games, oh, by the way, for assaulting his wife. Was hung in the press box, like no big deal, until it became a big deal when one of the women in the media caught the sign, tweeted it out, and said, there's the newest addition to the Cubs press box. Her name is Madeline Kinney. A lot of people were really unhappy about that and thought, is this really happening? A, is this happening in 2019? B, is this happening in a format, again, that is not, let's celebrate the historic, how far baseball has come. This is, with no context, just put up on the wall because it's part of the history. And three, knowing what the organization has been going through with regard to domestic issues all the way. Not a great look for the Chicago Cubs. I was really shocked by this and really disappointed that somebody, whoever hung this up, and of course it was a, oh, I'm not really sure who, we'll get to the bottom of it type thing. And of course they took it down and then put up a picture of when they had pink out, which was when everybody in the bleachers wore pink. Am I overreacting?
So to me, which I did my homework this week, by the way, I read the story.
Good job. That's right.
Just
last
so you
week,
know, last week I did
right.
not read.
That's right. She didn't want to get called on in class, so she decided that she'd be prepared this
week. This week I read both stories.
Atta girl.
And the worst part about this to me, first I was baffled. I'm like, and I agree with you. I'm like the pink poodle. But then you sit there and you think, you go, well, what's the most female dog out there? It's going to be a poodle. Mm-hmm. So I get it.
Yeah.
Pink poodle. Okay, fine. What's the worst part is they take it down to replace with a pink out.
Yeah.
I'm like, really? That's your lame thing that you're going to put up? That's what you want to do. So that to me, as horrible as it was that they put it up, they think replacing it with a pink out at Wrigley is justifiable and fine.
I assume the pink out was to support breast
cancer. Breast cancer. I think, yes.
So, I mean, that part I'm okay with. But...
Oh, and by the way, they did switch that picture out as well with fans celebrating the Cubs World Series victory. But please
see,
continue.
See, because that's more baffling to me. Like, really? The pink? You're going to just...
Yeah.
No.
Yeah, I mean, I think for them to look at that and not think it was going to offend someone...
How about the women who are there to work?
Right. Was...
who already probably don't feel comfortable
yeah,
at times?
Yeah, was so short-sighted. Obviously, there are... a lot of people who have never really been in that situation where, you know, a lot of men in this country especially have been in a situation where they've never been persecuted against,
mm-hmm.
right? Or they've never not been invited.
Discriminated
to
against,
things,
sure.
Right? And mm-hmm. so they wouldn't understand that part.
Right.
But I'm sure at least one woman works for the Cubs and you'd think they would show it to her and say, hey, what do you think about this? And she mm-hmm. would go, are you kidding me?
Right.
Right. In a museum that shows how the media has progressed and how many
yes.
women are now in sports media, that's awesome. But for this, where women are actually going to walk through the door and have to look at that sign,
right.
then, right, why would that ever be something to be celebrated?
How about this? 1977 was the first time a woman was issued a credential in a Major League Baseball game. It was with the Yankees. Her name is Melissa Ludke. And she was the first woman that was granted
yeah, I get not
access.
Being allowed into the clubhouse for baseball or the locker room for football, basketball. I get that. I understand why sometimes, or for the longest time, women weren't allowed in there. I understand.
Which is, I understand,
the
but
men,
also
the
think,
players may not want a female
right.
in there.
But the press box is different.
But the press box is totally
also
different.
To the point, because that is an issue that we don't specifically have to deal with because we don't have to go in the locker room like beat reporter people who need to go in there who weren't allowed to get the stories that they needed to get, mm-hmm. just like the guys were needing to get. So then either make it to where nobody can go in there, or you need to make sure that everybody can
come
in.
Well, and I went in the locker room
right.
for the Jaguars for a season, and it was never uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. But I was also prepared that I was going to see some naked men, and I just needed to keep mm-hmm. my eyes up. Oh. Right. And sometimes I might have to talk to somebody who's in the midst of changing, and hopefully they're going to be professional, and they always were. But I think in 2019, the players themselves are used to seeing females in there. I was not the first ever female to go in the locker room no. while they're changing, so it's much less of a big deal
sure.
now. But right, I mean,
but the, just think was, about the idea.
Sure, there was a decade
that
in
you
the 70s
go in there.
That women finally started to, you know, women burned their bras and women finally started to realize their independence. And so that's where it's no surprise to me that it wasn't until 77.
But yeah. that's what I would have liked to have seen replaced with that.
A burnt bra?
Yes. I would have liked to have seen photos of the women going into the locker room afterwards. Like the first photos of something like that. Not a
yes.
pink out. Or
right.
now the World Series. Like something
that
if
acknowledges,
you're going to discriminate the woman,
it.
Then you
yeah.
have to praise the woman.
Mm-hmm. I still think that it is, as much as we want to believe in 2019, as we sit here, the three of us women hosting a women's sports talk radio show, that we're further along as in this industry than we actually are. I mean, I think the reality is there's still a lot of work to be done. There's still a lot of barriers that we have to break down and prove and do all these things so that we're accepted as either it's a, you know, a journalist or an entertainer or whatever word you want to give what we do, a combination of all those things, I suppose. But there's still a lot of work to be done. And 1977, now this makes me feel old because I was born 5 years after that. We were about the same age, right? Early mm-hmm. 80s, whatever. Mm-hmm. When we were kids, like I, at the time, did not realize in the moment the strides the women had just recently made, late 70s, especially in the sports world, and then still how far some of us still have to go.
But that, I think, goes to kind of your upbringing. Like, I didn't either. I never felt like I was behind the times. I never felt like I couldn't reach my goal. It was always, whatever you want. This my mom's original dream before she got married and had kids was to do exactly what I'm doing. She wanted to be the ESPN reporter. She wanted to be on TV, sports reporter nonstop. And so I was always taught that. That's what she wanted to do. So I never thought, well, if I guess it can't be done. But yeah, of course it can.
Well, I did realize fairly young, my mom would say, I would ask her if she played a certain sport. My mom would say, oh, they didn't have that for girls. All they had was cheerleading and volleyball. What? Those are the only two sports they have when you were in high school? That's it. So I knew that sports-wise, it was not certainly as accessible for females as yeah. it was for males in the 70s. But by the time even my first year playing club soccer in Jacksonville at the beach, I was on the first all-girls club soccer team. So even in the 90s, women were really girls, obviously, then we're still maybe we were 12. We were still making strides as far as the extra level of competitive soccer. Rec soccer had been around for a long time, but the traveling teams that boys had always done did not exist before my team, at least here at the beach in Jacksonville. So I did realize that we were, you know, not necessarily the same. But I certainly had not paid close attention to sports media.
Yeah. Well, women are making strides not only in the media side of things, but also the coaching as well. We heard from Muffet McGraw earlier this week with regard to the lack of women coaches in her sport, women's basketball. We're going to talk to UNF softball coach Marcy Higgs about her role as the head coach of a Division I softball team, plus check in on the Ospreys. We do that coming up next. Hour number two rolling along here on Helmets and Heels, built by Dreamfinders Homes. I'm Lauren Rue, joined by Lauren Brooks and Donna Murphy. Catch us every Tuesday evening beginning at 6 o'clock on 1010XL and 92.5 FM. Also streaming on the app and online at 1010XL.com. All right, joining us now, UNF head softball coach Marcy Higgs, who joins us, whose team is 21-14, 4-5 in conference play. But even more impressive, Marcy, you are 5 wins away from number 300. Thanks for joining us this evening. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thank you for having me.
You bet. Tell us what that number 300, first of all, do you even think about something like that?
Honestly, I didn't even know it till today. You know, we kind of keep our head down and focus on one game at a time. And right now the goal is to get to the ASUN tournament and give ourselves a shot at the championship. But it's kind of awesome, you know, to know that mark is coming up, and it's exciting. It took a little longer than I would have liked, but we're getting there.
Marcy, this is your 11th season. Tell me the significance behind you, for you, of being a female coach.
You know, it's been obviously, I took a different road than, you know, some of the other coaches on our staff and some of the other coaches in general. I played Division II. So this was always my goal, to be a head coach at a Division I school, in a very competitive conference. And I think it's a huge accomplishment for me and something I'm really proud of to be at UNF and for an extended period of time.
And speaking of that competitive conference, Marcy, what went through your mind when Liberty was set to join the ASUN, now that certainly we've already seen their success in basketball and in baseball and certainly in softball too?
I think it's exciting. I think it's a really positive thing for our conference. Obviously, they went well into playoffs, got a lot of good exposure last year going into the regional final. I think it's really good for the ASUN. I think it'll be really competitive. We have them actually coming up in a 3-game series this weekend. So it'll be quite a battle. They're leading our conference at the moment, and they have a great program. They've represented the ASUN really well in their first year.
You'll play them in a doubleheader on Saturday and then the series finale on Sunday afternoon. What makes them so good?
Well, I think they're well coached. They obviously have a lot of great athletes on their team. They're really balanced with great pitching and great offense. So you really have to find a couple different ways to beat them. It just makes them tough all the way around.
Marcy, let's take a look at your current team. You have two phenomenal players on there right now. Talk about your team and the way it looks.
Oh, my gosh. Okay, so the two players that you're talking about, Dominika Kukuza and Navia Penrod, two seniors that I will be absolutely heartbroken when they graduate. But they are absolutely self-made athletes. You know, they came in and they, from the time they got here, had goals that they knew they wanted to accomplish, and nothing was going to stop them from reaching those goals. They are two of the hardest working players I've ever had in my entire career at any school. Great role models. And just like the work ethic, and it's all behind the scenes, you know, like they'll be out there at night, lights on in the cage, hitting, and no one will even know about it until it kind of comes out in random conversation later. So, I mean, they just go out, they do their job, they set a great example, and they're both great leaders as well.
Let's stick with those two players for a moment, Marcy. Marcy Higgs, UNF softball coach, joining us here on Helmets and Heels, built by Dreamfinders Homes. All those things that you mentioned about them, self-made, pushing themselves, four-year student athletes, did they have an underlying motivational factor for this, or that's just who they are?
I think it's just who they are, you know, like that was what stood out with the two of them on the recruiting trail. Just their competitiveness, their drive to win, and you know, positive outlook. And, you know, they came in and they absolutely lived up to everything that we thought they'd be during that recruiting process. And like I said, they've held their teammates to a higher standard, and they've set an amazing example for us and kind of led us to where we are now.
Before this past weekend, you guys were on the road a lot. Did that help shape your team?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, our first two weekends of ASUN play, we were at North Alabama, which was, it probably took us a solid 13 hours on a bus to get there.
Oof.
And then you add in the time change, which always complicates it a little bit. Second weekend out, we did fly. Went up to Lipscomb in Nashville, but they're two of the longest trips in the conference. But now, obviously, it's a lot of bonding time on the bus and in the hotels and on the road. And it's a test to go play someone else on their home field, and especially teams of that caliber. I mean, Lipscomb sitting in the number two spot right now, and we went up and played pretty well there through, you know, the first two games of the series. And to be back home now and knowing that, you know, outside of the ASUN tournament, our longest trip is to Stetson. So kind of at this point feels like a home game as well. So it's nice to be playing on our home field for a while.
Marcy, I want to circle back to something that Donna mentioned earlier in our conversation. Muffet McGraw, I first of all, she's the head coach of the women's Notre Dame basketball team. Did you hear her comments regarding women in coaching in college basketball?
Absolutely.
All right. Knowing what she said and knowing what you know about your role and where softball coaches fall in terms of how many men versus how many women there are, what did you agree with in what she said, and maybe did you disagree with anything she said?
Well, I think she's absolutely right that there are too few women in power positions in general, and not just in sports, but everywhere. You know, you grow up telling, you know, with kids being told they can be anything they want when they grow up, and they believe that, but to a point where they see it, you know, and then they grow up and they see, well, there's only men in those positions, so maybe I can't be anything I want to be. I think we would definitely benefit from having more women in those positions, but I think on the other side of it, like, I have a male assistant myself, and when we went through the hiring process, we collected resumes, we ran interviews with male and female candidates, and we selected the best candidate for the job, and it happened to be a male. And, you know, it's been a great fit for us. He's done a phenomenal job, and I wouldn't go back and change anything just to have a female on my staff. So I think, if anything, that might be the one area where I disagree. I think, if anything, women are underrepresented in men's sports, not the other way around. But I do agree that the women are underrepresented in, you know, upper-level positions across the board.
Well, then, Marcy, I want to ask you about there's a big to-do on Sunday Night Baseball when it comes to Jessica Mendoza being in the booth. What are your thoughts on what she is like, her comments, anything like that?
I think she's amazing. I think she's been phenomenal for MLB, and she's been phenomenal to have, you know, the face of softball on such a huge stage. I think it's unfortunate that a female in this type of position stands out as much as it does. You know, anytime that there's a female coaching in men's sport, you probably know about most of them. Probably don't know about all the guys coaching women's sports. I think that's where the disparity is for me. But as far as Jess Mendoza, I think she is amazing, and I think she has done a tremendous amount for the perception of women in sports.
And Marcy, one of the comments Muffet McGraw made that astounded me, I did not realize, only 10% of athletic directors in all of college sports are females. Don't you find a stat like that completely perplexing?
I think it's absolutely mind-blowing. And, you know, I went back through after I listened to it and read through the article to make sure I heard her correctly. And you're right. I mean, there are so many women that compete at such a high level and, you know, go through the same type of academic programs as the men and work their way up through administration. And it just seems like, you know, by the time you hit the highest level of athletic administration, it apparently kind of gets halted a little bit in favor of a male hire. I was fortunate when, you know, when I was in college a few years ago, we had a female president and a female athletic director. So that's what I saw growing up. So, like I said, like, you know what you see. And I thought that was kind of a cool perspective. They were always very visible at our games and on campus, and kind of gave me a very positive outlook of women in sports and, like, where I could go moving forward.
Absolutely. UNF head softball coach Marcy Higgs with us. Marcy, I love the story of how you did not play softball until your freshman year of high school because you were playing baseball with the boys and you really didn't want to go play softball with the ladies. Is that right?
I was playing baseball with the boys. Yeah, I was. Softball at the Little League level when I was growing up was kind of just getting started. And the boys baseball was way more competitive, and that was what I wanted to do. And I was accepted arms wide open, and I kind of didn't know any better. And then, you know, I actually played my 13-year-old year. I played on the all-star team for my town, and still have a great relationship with a lot of the guys that I played with. Never felt like anything was out of the ordinary. And then suddenly, kind of when I got ready to go from eighth grade into ninth grade to high school, was told that I needed to, you know, make that switch, and kind of got pressured to switch over, and wasn't really excited about it. You know, I loved my team. I wanted to stay with my teammates, and kind of reluctantly made the switch. And obviously now I'm glad I did, but at the time it wasn't really what I had set out to do.
How different were the two games?
It was a lot different playing with girls than it was with boys, I'll tell you that. But I'm not in a good or bad way. You know, it was a little bit different. On the outset, when I first started playing softball, I had a little bit of an easier time standing out. But, you know, eventually you get through high school, you get to college, now everybody's at your level. And I think that's a transition, whether you played baseball or whether you didn't, that a lot of kids, when they go into the college level, they kind of hit that realization, you know, everybody on the college team was an all-star at their high school. And so now you're learning to, compete harder and step up for those positions with a more equal talent level.
The UNF softball team will be in action tomorrow. We went ahead and skipped ahead to this matchup with Liberty because I know it's a big one, Marcy, this weekend. But you guys are actually in action tomorrow evening against Florida A&M. That's a home game before you welcome in Liberty for a three-game series against them. We appreciate the time this evening. Best of luck, and we'll be pulling for you to get to those 300 wins. But I know, more importantly, for your team to continue winning.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Marcy Higgs, head coach of the UNF softball team, joining us here on Helmets and Heels, built by Dreamfinders Homes.
So I told y'all, you know, we first started playing club soccer. I was about 12. Well, there was a girl on an all-boys soccer team that we had heard, you know, potentially was going to start playing with us the next year. So we all went out and watched her play. She was a forward. Her play with the boys.
Mm-hmm.
And you could tell immediately how fast she was because she had played at a much faster speed of the game with the boys. And so we, of course, couldn't wait till she joined our team, and she did extremely well. But it goes to show you, right, like, you shouldn't necessarily separate kids that young.
Right.
You should have the most talented kids all play together. And certainly in a sport like soccer, where it's not necessarily as physical
yeah.
as certainly a sport, you know, like football.
Right. I always wonder, because I have a boy and a girl, and because there are a couple of girls, not many, who play 10U baseball right now, but at why we go immediately from T-ball and go split and you go play softball and you go play baseball. You know, I've never really thought about why we go, the reason for the split and why it wasn't, there was a girls baseball. I mean, obviously because women's softball became more popular before my kids were born, but just this idea of, because my daughter has said, I want to play baseball, not softball. And I'm like, well, I don't have an answer for that as to why she can't. And if I should just push her to go the baseball direction, if that's what she wants to do, mm-hmm. or encourage her to go the softball direction, because over the long run, if that's where right. she wants, you know what I mean?
Yeah, well, it sounds like if she's allowed to play baseball, she will end up probably being one of the better softball players mm-hmm. if she's able to play.
Sure. I think that's really interesting. I did want to ask her if she thought a woman would ever make it play on a, I don't know that there's been ever a collegiate baseball okay. player. I feel like I read something not too long ago. Do you remember the young lady who pitched in the Little League World Series a few years ago?
Yes.
What was her name? I can't think of her name. Anyway, I think she ended up playing softball when it was all said and done.
I want to say Dana,
I
don't
know. No, something. Yeah, we'll come up with it. Matt LaVey, did we give away our Peter Brook chocolate heel?
Yes, we did. John is the lucky winner tonight.
John.
Monet Davis.
That's right. You had a D,
D
in the
I
right
knew
direction.
A D.
Just in the end. When Donna Murphy sent this topic idea in, it was anti-Yankee because she is a Red Sox. It was hammering down on A-Rod.
Oh.
And it is also something I can relate to, sort of, in terms of a painting of myself that I have no idea what I'm going to do with. That's coming up next. The future of Mr. Jennifer Lopez is in the news.
It's so appropriate.
See what I did there?
Yes.
See what I did there?
That's very appropriate.
Oh, A-Rod has had quite the dating past. And in 2009, a former lover said some things that aren't not that surprising, that A-Rod is an egomaniac, okay, that he's vain, okay, but that he also had two paintings of himself hanging in his home where he was a centaur, which is half man, half horse. He denies it, says, no, absolutely not. I don't have paintings of myself hanging in my house.
It's just so bizarre and out of left field, it has to be true. Because who would say he has a painting of himself as a centaur?
Yeah, that, I don't feel like it's one of the things you just make up.
Right?
I mean, I don't know. There's some crazy women out there.
Like portraits of himself all over, you could say.
Sure.
But a centaur.
Yeah. I don't know that I would admit to that either. However, I do have a portrait of myself and my sister that we are not really sure what we're going to do with once my mother passes on from this earth. Who I hope that doesn't happen to for a very, very long time. But my mom is an only child. and my mom doesn't have anybody who would want this. Now, before I get myself in too much trouble here, my mom's one of her very best friends is an artist, and she's a phenomenal artist. And my mom is from the South. My mom is from a place called Blytheville, Arkansas. I don't expect anyone listening to know where that is. It's basically on the other side of the Arkansas-Tennessee border. It's about an hour from Memphis. And it's the South, and there's cotton fields, and it's one of those, you can imagine, southern towns. And with that comes kids in their smocked dresses and their...
overalls? Bare feet?
No, not that, like southern, like, oh, okay. Like southern, honey.
Southern bells.
Southern bells, okay. Sort of. And with that comes interesting traditions, or maybe just hobbies, and that's having paintings done of your children. So my sister and I, like, this was probably 7 or 8 years ago. My mom was like, I'm going to get Nancy to paint a picture of the two of you. And we were like, oh, okay, great. And it wasn't like a recent picture. It was a picture of us where I was probably 5 and my sister was 3. Okay. And so she took pictures of us and put them together essentially and painted a portrait of us.
Their hands are going very wide.
Yes. How and big? That is because remember we played this game earlier. Portrait. I'm going to tell you right now, it is probably with frame and all, it is probably 4 feet tall by like 3 or 4 feet wide.
Like our Elvis we have in Beef's room?
Bigger than the Elvis.
Oh, dear.
So maybe it's bigger than that. It's huge. It's bigger than the whiteboard behind you. It's probably the size of that window, but maybe a tad bigger. And she did a great job, okay? But what in the actual hell are we going to do with this portrait of ourselves?
Is she a famous artist?
No.
Okay, so I mean, Antique Roadshow is out.
No one's going to care. It's going to look like those creepy, like, again.
I think you...
What am I going to do with it?
Either agree to share it as in, you have to take it for 10 years, and then I have to take it for 10 years, and then it goes back to you for 10 years, and whichever one of us, you know, ends the process.
It would cost a fortune. My sister lives in D.C. I live here. I don't know how we would even get it to one of our homes. I mean, the cost we would incur. Thank
would you. Could you burn
sending it?
Burn it?
God, that's terrible.
Feed it to the gators?
I mean, I do that. If you both hate it.
No, that's, if you're listening, we don't hate
it. Not hate the painting, but hate the idea of owning it.
Again, what do you do with a portrait of yourself, a giant oil painting of yourself and your sister when you were children, and you don't live in the South, and you don't live on, like, in a big white...
Has your husband seen
Gone
this?
With the Wind? Yes.
And his thoughts are? Horrific?
And every time we'd walk up the stairs, it was like, those creepy kids are staring at me. Like from a horror movie?
Like the shining when it's kids like, are staring
when
at
when it's
you.
Like the painting is like watching me, that's what it felt like. Now, she has recently moved, and it is not hanging in her new house. I am very curious as to what she's done with it.
Burned it.
But what do you do? I mean, do you all have like any pictures of yourself hanging in your house that doesn't have your significant other with you in it or a family member?
The only photo I have of myself, just me, is on my bedroom mirror because it was in my best shape. So that
it's
is my
motivation.
My motivational photo.
Yep.
I have zero pictures of just me in the house.
How about your senior photos?
My boyfriend, just
that's
him.
That's still at my parents' house.
How great were your... Be honest. Are you leaning up against any kind of object in
no.
any of your senior photos?
No, I look...
No?
I look damn good no. in my senior photo.
What do you mean no? Y'all didn't do
no,
the whole, like...
No,
we photo
sat
shoot?
Down. No, oh, no photo shoot.
People didn't do that here, huh?
No, I had or a there. Gold off-the-shoulder wrap.
Okay, that's like your yearbook picture, right?
Yeah.
Okay, well, we did this whole, like... You would change outfits, and you'd be like leaning up against a tree, and then there'd be the one that was standard for everybody in the yearbook. Okay, you didn't do those?
Nope.
All right, fair enough.
Nope. Class photo, right? You do the massive, your senior class?
We didn't do that.
Oh. I don't remember. It's been too long.
Yeah, we had that one. But no. No,
didn't have
up.
The senior pictures.
But going back to A-Rod, if I were starting to date someone, and I went to their house,
and
they had even a portrait of themselves not even, let alone the centaur part. Even if it's just a portrait of themselves that was painted, that was hung up, I would end the relationship right then and there. I would say thank you for your time and paying for dinner, assuming that he did, and I would turn right back around and I would leave.
Because it reeks of ego. Obviously.
That, yes. That yes, means that weirdo. To that point, he's been pretending to be a humble, nice gentleman. And the reality is he's not. I always say, and I sometimes get in trouble for this saying, but this is a little different than the portrait. But selfie equals selfish. If you look up someone's profile, whether Instagram, Twitter, regardless, the more selfies you see, the more selfish that person is. Again, I know there are some people that you could point out right now and say, no, no, that person does it for work. And I'm not saying it's across the board without fail. But in my world, that's kind of what I've come up
with. Selfies equals selfish.
Correct.
Well, I mean, self is part of the
word. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And thus, thusly, the portrait equals complete egomaniac.
Full blown.
If it's of himself.
Craziness. But if you had to have a portrait made of you, though, if an artist said, I'm going to do a portrait of you, what do you want? How do you want it?
I would want to be
riding a dolphin over a rainbow.
Fishing on the front of a boat and have like a nice big fish like right on the line. And the moment they catch it is when I'm like starting to reel the fish in.
I like that.
That's nice. Mm-hmm.
Thanks.
Have you ever done a caricature?
Oh, yeah.
There's one hanging up in my office.
Oh, there is
Brent
one.
Martin.
Yes, that's right. Yeah. I always like, I've sometimes wanted to do those, but I thought, no, they're just going to pull like all my bad qualities out and over-exaggerate them, and I really don't need that.
Well, we have two. TJ and I did one when we first got together, and then we did one when JT was 2 years old, so we have us three. So in a couple years, we'll do another one with Summer, so we'll have like
that's cool.
Everybody progresses, yeah. And you have different people that do the characters, so you can see, oh, I like how that one treated my hair.
In my nose, in my eyes.
Right. What
my
would y'all
teeth.
Be doing in a portrait?
I have some fantastic photos of me in my dancing younger days that I would love to be made into a portrait.
Okay, see, now that is something I could work with. If there was like a normal size, even bigger, maybe 16 right. by 20 painting of me like in a ballerina tutu, which mm-hmm. I never really wore, but something that it was like, oh,
uniform.
That's you doing
right, so,
and that's a piece of art, and you can totally get that.
Right,
this I don't. I'm telling you, there's, and I don't want a portrait of myself. I'm good. Thank you very much. All right.
I have to see it. You need to take.
I'll take
picture.
A picture. I will.
Yeah,
I probably
because I am
one
intrigued
right
to find out these creepy girls.
Yes, I will. I will see if I can dig one up for you.
I also want to find out where it is now.
Oh, me too. I that's a great question, because since my mom moved, her new modern house does not fit the style of old Southern charm. So I'm not
really,
sure.
Earlier you said if you lived in the South, you do live in the South. So certainly that portrait
Florida
would fit
is
here.
Really Florida. I mean, I know we're
is.
South.
Like if we were in Georgia.
We're,
I mean, I don't know. I've yet to meet anybody here.
Closer to Georgia than we are Orlando.
Well, that's true. But I've yet to meet anybody that fits the stereotype that mm-hmm. I'm describing in terms of old Southern, you know, eight China patterns and cloth napkins and crystal and stemware and monogrammed everything.
Yep.
Now, you might be out there and you might be listening right now, but I have yet to run into you. So Dwayne Wade is making his final appearances the next week or so, couple of weeks in the regular NBA season, and he's hanging it up. Which is always a really, I'm making an assumption here, but I think it's a fair one. I think it's a really difficult decision for most professional athletes to make. Mm-hmm. We saw Jason Witten kind of balk at the idea once he said, I'm done, and then said, no, wait, maybe I'm not done. There's talk of Gronk maybe returning, who knows. But I truly believe that most professional athletes, men or women, have some sort of identity type crisis when this is all they've known, and this has been their identity for so long. So when I stumbled upon this clip today of Dwayne Wade and his wife sitting down with Matt LaVey, can you remind me? Because you've got it pulled up.
Rachel Nichols.
That's right. Rachel Nichols sits down with him.
Love
just
her.
Just a short snippet from a conversation she had today with Dwayne Wade regarding his retirement and kind of what he plans to do right away.
You're walking away from the structure of your entire life. What do you think that's going to be like?
And I'll be in therapy. No, seriously.
Okay.
I mean, it's going to be a big change. I told my wife, I said, I need to do therapy. We need to do a little bit. And I was always against someone that don't know me telling me how to live my life or, you know, giving me instructions on it. But I know I need someone to talk to about it, you know, because it's a big change. And even though, like, my life got a long life to live and there's other great things I can accomplish and do, it's not this.
This is one of the things I like most when athletes are honest. Mm-hmm. That stuff, because that's the real stuff. That is, I know that my life is getting ready to be completely different than it's been for so many years. I know that it's not easy to walk away from that identity, walk away from that life, from what it has been every single year for however many years. And to come out and say, getting mental health help, if you will, taking care of your mind just like you would your body, should not have this negative connotation or the stigma behind it that makes you weak or anything lesser than. And I absolutely love this.
Have y'all seen the Budweiser ad that they did for Dwayne Wade?
No. Oh, I've been like, people are like crying about
crying.
It.
Okay, so here's why they're crying.
It's almost 3 minutes. Is it pretty long?
It's
maybe
yeah,
there's like an extended,
it's a
like
few minutes, okay. But it's not bad. But so basically all this season he's been exchanging his jersey with really good players from other teams. LeBron James being one, Bradley Beal, for instance, Dirk Nowitzki. So then Budweiser pulls him in and said they have 5 more jerseys that they want him to exchange with people, not NBA players. I don't know if he knew that part because I watched it on silent. But anyway, here are the 5 people. His own mom, who struggled with addiction, went to prison and turned her own life around through him. I'm sure most people remember mm-hmm. that story. And then here are some of the kickers. A woman who desperately wanted to go to college but couldn't afford it until his organization gave her a full tuition scholarship. A man whose life was going down a dark path until he heard Dwayne Wade speak about some things he had been through and that inspired him to change his entire life. A woman whose house was burned down before Christmas and Wade took them on a shopping spree.
I remember that one.
And the sister of a victim lost in the Parkland shooting. The kid
Remember
who lost his life,
yeah.
His favorite player was Wade, and the NBA superstar wrote the boy's name on his shoes mm-hmm. for a game to honor his memory. Mm. So his mom at the end says, I'm more proud of the man you've become than the basketball player. You are bigger than basketball. So to your point as far as about players being honest, it's also a testament about players who understand that they are role models and they have an enormous amount of power, influence, and money that they can use for good. And so certainly cheers to him and the legacy that he will leave after he's done with the sport of basketball.
And isn't he the one, him and his wife, aren't they in the Gatorade Zero commercial?
Yes. Yes.
Being competitive. Now, yes. She's always been right there by his side through the past few years. And
Gabrielle Union.
Yeah.
Yes.
So
I can think of her name.
I think it's great. I love how honest he was and said that, you know, he included her, that we need to go to therapy. Having a strong support system at home like that and acknowledging it is, wow, it's very mature and it's extremely honest, especially in this, you know, hush-hush kind of keep your, you know, mental health quiet in the athletic world.
Yeah, I was a big fan of this. Now, for what it's worth, the Heat, who won't make the playoffs, actually 2 games left. I'm behind in this time warp of not realizing that the NBA regular season is almost over.
Almost.
Tonight they'll play Philadelphia, and then tomorrow night is the regular season finale, or the season finale for the Heat against Brooklyn. So that'll be so all these tributes are coming out, mm-hmm. His final goodbyes. I think he's one of those players that I can't recall any controversy really with him. In terms of being anybody but a good guy. Mm-hmm. Am I wrong about that, Matt LaVey? Would you agree that he's...
He's never had any off-the-court issues or anything like that. Holds himself in a good manner. He always carried himself well on the court.
Yeah, I can't remember any either. Yeah. But, I mean, I certainly don't follow
the NBA
super
close enough,
closely.
Sure.
But, yeah, anytime that overall someone's impacted other people's lives this positively, I think that's, you know, something mm-hmm. to take away. By the way, Fordham and Florida State are squaring off in baseball right now. It is 1-1.
They like those Tuesday night games. Well, midweek games usually when you play out of conference. So we were at the baseball
That's
game
right.
2 weeks. Was that 2 weeks ago?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Also, one more thing. The Heat are actually, I've told like three lies on this show so far in the last 3 minutes of it. The Heat are in a three-way tie for eighth, I believe.
So could make the playoffs.
And yeah, so like in the next two games, right, Matt? 38 and 42, both with the Hornets and they're right behind the Pistons at 39 and 41. So
yeah, they need some help right now, but I'm hoping they make that push to get the spot.
Just for Dwayne Wade?
Oh, yeah. See,
yeah, purpose, yeah.
He has to go out with at least a playoff run here.
You think so? Yeah, I don't know. Could be some work for sure. All right, ladies, I think that does it for us this evening. Any parting words before next Tuesday?
Nope.
Nothing. Good. Nothing at all. All right, don't forget we'll have coverage of the Masters coming up Thursday and Friday beginning at 2 o'clock, both on the AM dial. That's 1010 AM. Then Saturday and Sunday, 1010 AM and 92.5. You'll have full Masters play-by-play coverage beginning at 2 o'clock. For Andrew Gibson, who gets us through our first hour, Matt LaVey, who takes us in to the home stretch, Donna Murphy, Lauren Brooks, Lauren Rue. I am Lauren Rue. We thank Marcy Higgs for joining us tonight on the program. We thank you for listening. Have a great rest of your evening. Stay tuned for Into the Night with Rick LaLue.